Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services, and you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services at walkinshawracing.com.au.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hello and welcome to the Castrol Motorsport News Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Van Leeuwen, and here's what's making news this week. Supercars has reportedly rejected a foreign takeover bid. Belgian media company Fantech is understood to have made an offer to buy the series from new owners Race, which was turned down by the Race board. It's a decision that not everyone has been happy with, it seems, and we'll have more on that later in the pod. There's been some movement on the Gen 3 development front. The new fuel filler has been signed off. The engines are set to undergo endurance testing in the US, and the oil system will be under scrutiny during testing at the Bend this coming Friday and the following Monday. Chaz Mostert, meanwhile, has had his first taste of Gen 3 hardware at Queensland Raceway last week. Interestingly, he drove the Mustang, not the Camaro, ahead of Walkinshaw Andretti United's impending switch to Ford. Sad news from across the ditch, with motor racing activities set to cease at Pukekohe Park from April next year onwards. Owner Auckland Thoroughbred Racing will shift its focus solely to horse racing with a plan to increase training density by building additional stabling facilities. Supercars says it's committed to racing in New Zealand beyond Pukekohe's closure. Premier Racing has moved into its new permanent home, a state-of-the-art facility in Arundel on the Gold Coast. The return of World Series Sprint Cars has been postponed for another year. Speedway Australia made the decision to stick with the Sprint Car State Series for a third consecutive year due to concerns over tyre supply and shipping delays. Shane Van Gisbergen crashed out of the lead of the Hawke's Bay Rally in New Zealand over the weekend. The Supercars points leader was 17 seconds up on the field when he slid off the road on the fourth stage. Ben Hunt went on to take victory. And Cooper Webster is the first driver to be confirmed for the Tasman Series. The teenager will continue with Versa Motorsport for the second part of the S5000 season, which kicks off on the Gold Coast in October. Joining me this week to discuss all that and much more is a teammate that is actively campaigning for the return of the Wellington 500 following Pukekohe's demise, Stefan Bartholomaeus. Stefan, how are you this week?
G'day, Andrew. Wow, that would be incredible. Wellington.
I know.
That looked like a pretty wild joint back in the day. Yep. I reckon some of those bumps and the angle of some of those walls would give a modern track inspector a heart attack, don't you reckon?
Well, that's what we want to see. We're sick of acres of runoff. We're sick of, like, let's get back old school. Let's trade old school for old school and bring back the Wellington. That's what you're doing, not me, obviously.
It's got my vote.
There you go. There's some pretty tasty stuff going on in Supercars ownership land this week, Stefan. Probably not a discussion I necessarily expected us to be happening less than a year after the last change of ownership for the series, although there has been a lot of rumblings about all sorts of things related to finances and the makeup of boards and the split of boards and all this sort of stuff pretty much since Race took over Supercars last year. Now, just to briefly explain what's been going on, according to a report from the Australian newspaper, European sports media outfit Fantech offered to buy out the existing shareholders and take on a reported $45 million of debt. The shareholders would have seen as much as a 20% return on their initial investment, but after letting Fantech undergo due diligence and all that stuff, the Race board voted not to sell. That didn't necessarily go down well with everyone in the ownership circle. Gary Rogers told Auto Action that he thought it was a fair deal and spoke about Race being in the market for more money to fund the business. Now, on that, it appears that the Domerset family, which is part of the ownership group, just tipped in a $10 million loan, and Race is now looking for another $10 to $12 million of investment before the end of the year. So obviously all of that plays into the bigger picture of should they have sold, should they have hung on. Stefan, here's the bit that I don't necessarily understand. If the business is just a bottomless money pit and everyone is destined to lose their shirts, wouldn't, you know, you've got Barclay Nettlefold as the chair, you've got all of these business people involved, the Domazets and all that involved in the investment of it, wouldn't they be more than happy to take their 20% return and tap dance off into the sunset? I mean, why would they hang on and keep looking for more cash if they didn't see a longer term gain, I guess, is sort of the idea that sticks in my head. What do you make about what seems to be a pretty messy situation?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot to digest out of all of that. And I think the most extraordinary thing for me is the way that's all playing out so publicly. And I think that shows, it really shows the level of frustration that's coming from the ARG side. The fact that they have gone so public with it. And, you know, funnily enough, like last week we kind of did dip into this topic a bit serendipitously with the talk about the Trans Am situation with Shane Van Gisbergen not being able to drive. And
we
sort of flagged that this whole ownership mix hasn't really worked out. And it's important to remember that, you know, Barclays Bid and ARG, they were separate bids and they sort of came together very late in the piece. As a bit of a marriage of convenience with Barclay needing ARG's funding just to get the whole thing over the line. So clearly the ARG guys thought this was going to help all their categories too, but it's been an uncomfortable fit from the start. And, yeah, it's just it comes down to it's two parties whose goals aren't really aligned and it's not really a steady state scenario. Something has to give.
Yeah, it is. Does kind of have a Cold War feel to it. You know, if we look at that, the ARG involvement in this mess, you know, there's been multiple instances of the Rogers going public or at least semi-public with their grievances as this news has sort of come to light. You know, first there was the comments from Gary regarding his disappointment that the Fantech deal wasn't taken. The conversation quickly shifted to how disappointed the Rogers are that having ARG in that ownership circle hasn't brought supercars and ARG closer together, as you just pointed out. Barry Rogers told Nine's Wild World of Sports that things like Giz being banned from driving the Trans Am could lead to them wanting to get out of their shares in supercars. There was then a letter sent to supercars team owners by Gary Rogers explaining that, you know, he wanted to buy into the series to bring the whole industry closer together and outlining his plan to grow the sport, which was mostly wrapped around the fact the series, you know, only race 12 times a year at the moment. Stefan, when you hear these guys talking about wanting to perhaps sell their shares, do you think that's genuine? I mean, if they wanted to sell, I'm not sure that public comments, you know, basically saying this thing's no good are really all that helpful in terms of getting the price that you want. So to me, it feels more like sort of posturing and politicking. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, there'd been some sort of behind the sheds chat that Barclay was trying to raise this funding to buy out ARG before all of this talk of Fantech and this offer had become public. I mean, one would think that the outcome of all of this is probably going to be that ARG sells out. I mean, it's not working for them. So one way or another, you can't really see it continuing like it is. But yeah, I mean, again, it just comes back to ARG aren't getting what they want. They want supercars to help all those ARG categories by having them on the big events. Like, I think for me, the future of ARG is a bit more unclear and uncertain than the future of supercars. Like, we've talked a lot about that stand deal that ARG did at the start of this year, which is lucrative from an upfront point of view, but their viewership's very small, the attendance of their events is really low. So where's it all going? Like, is that a competitor-based racing thing or is it a real big commercial product? And in order to be the latter, they need that crossover with supercars. That was the whole idea of buying in, but it's just not happening. And that's partly because you've got warring broadcasters in basically Seven and Nine that Seven aren't going to want these Nine properties on the big supercars events. So when you look at all that, I kind of worry for the future of ARG more than I do for supercars. But I think the other point I'd make with this is, like, how real was this Fantech bid that supercars rejected? Like, there hasn't been a lot of sort of scrutiny and detail on that. Like, did it have finance? Was it fully financed? Was it subject to raising the cash? I find it a little bit hard to believe that there was an entity out there willing to pay 20% overs up front for this thing. Like, as convenient as that would be as a solution to get ARG out of this deal that's not working for them, that kind of really came out of the blue, and I think there's a few question marks on that.
Yeah, well, I totally agree, and I guess that's what I come back to my earlier point. Like, it all seems too good to be true. So the fact that it was just pushed aside, there's obviously some bigger picture in play. Just to put you on the spot slightly, I mean, you mentioned the Stan deal and, you know, about, you know, is this competitor-based racing? Does it want to try and be commercially driven? Like, obviously, that was a big blow to the competitors, you know, when that deal was announced, particularly so close to the start of the season, because they were all expecting to have free-to-air TV and had sold sponsorship packages based on that and all that sort of stuff. So obviously, that has played its role here. I totally agree that there is big question marks to be asked over the future of ARG and where they go with all that stuff, because it does feel like the momentum has maybe slowed down a little bit compared to a couple of years ago, but certainly, you know, pre-COVID and all that sort of stuff. But if you flip it over to the supercars side, I mean, in this letter and in a lot of the public comments, Gary Rogers has talked about, you know, how beneficial it could be for supercars to have these extra support categories that are there and have TCR on the bill and this and that. But is that really the case? I mean, it's not like we have some sort of supports crisis for supercars. You've got Porsche that, you know, are heavily investing to be involved in Carrera Cup. You've got Toyota that are doing the same with the 86s. There are plenty of categories out there. Obviously, there's benefits for something like an S5000 at the Gold Coast or Adelaide or whatever. We have had some rounds that are fairly lean on really meaningful supports. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if you've got supercars, you've got your main product. That's what's always going to drive the people coming through the gate. Do you think that there is actually a huge benefit for supercars if they did want to try and utilise the ARG categories better?
I mean, I guess firstly, like, I look at that through the lens of a race fan that just wants to see all the best categories at all the best events. Like, that's the ideal scenario for the fan, but you're right in the sense of, like, packing out these big events where you've got the likes of Porsche and Toyota paying good money to be on there. They're not the events where supercars support card looks a little thin. It is those other ones like Simmons Plains and whatever that would give less benefit to the ARG categories being on it. So yeah, if supercars desperately needed ARG categories, then this whole thing wouldn't really be a problem, would it? Because it would have just worked itself out. But
exactly.
That's not really the position they're in.
All pretty messy. Speaking of things that have been messy at some points over the last, I don't know, 12 months, 24 months, let's move on to some developments in Gen 3. So we've seen a fair few changes, either ratified or close to. Obviously, you know, we've been talking about the front end of the car for months now and how it's undergone a fairly big redesign in terms of making the cars easy to work on, making it easier to make adjustments, you know, making it easier for guys to work on the engines and all that sort of stuff. Speaking of the engines, it appears that they've now been paritized, or at least very close to it, and will soon head to the US for significant dyno work to test durability and endurance. The top ends of the motors have been reworked since the decision to stick with the mechanical sequential gear shift to better deal with the inevitable over revs that will come. At the recent QR test, there was a fair bit of pit stop practice going on where a number of changes were trialled. Among them was the new lighter duty wheel nuts. Now, the idea of those is that teams will be able to use electric rattle guns in the garage and in future, probably during actual pit stops as well, although for the time being, crews will still need to use the pneumatic guns for the stops. The air spike has been moved forward to the front quarter panel rather than the side window. The fuel filler has been moved from the rear quarter panel to the side quarter window. There's a new look control refueling coupler that's been actually signed off by supercars now. Supercars traditionally has used a refueling system with separate fueling and breather hoses. It will now be an all-in-one system like most other categories use. That has been a bit of a sore point for some teams, given there will obviously be a changeover cost in that, and there was a theory that the driving force for the change was so that perhaps some people building the cars could then sell those cars overseas to race in other categories because they were more aligned with what other categories use. Anyway, the prototypes will currently be en route to the Bend for this weekend's event, with plans for a dedicated session on Friday and then more testing on the Monday. Luke Yulden and Zane Goddard will be in the cars on Friday. And on Monday will be Tim Slade, Jack LeBrock and Todd Hazelwood. And I think maybe Zane as well for the Monday running. In Townsville, we saw the focus was on the suspension over the curbs. For the bend, it will be on the oil system and how it deals with surge through the fast corners. I think there has been some issues with that along the way, so they'll be looking to see if they've been sorted and they can sign off on the oil system. Sorry for the massive information dump there, Stefan. What catches your eye from all of that?
Yeah, that's you pretty much wrapping what's come out in the last week. It's been a bit of a charm offensive of little bits and pieces, boxes being ticked and all that, which is all sounds like good progress. I guess like the bigger issue is this front end revision, which we've talked about for some months. That's not even in the cars yet. Like there was a lot of talk about bashing them over the curbs in Townsville, but the front end's going to be different in the final specs. So, you know, Triple Eight designed all that stuff and there was a fair bit of pushback, I think, from DJR on some elements of it, including the ease of setup changes and, you know, fitting the Coyote engine in that engine bay and all of that sort of stuff. So it's sort of been a technical discussion, but there's also a huge political element to it as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that stuff's going to go into the cars until after the bend. So I dare say they'll get a workout over those curbs at Sandown before they can sign that off, and then they will go into that process of ripping the Mustang apart to put the new 2023 body on that before aero testing. So the front end stuff's all happening really late. There's a lot still going on. What is happening as well is actually these center sections of the chassis are being made, and I believe there's four builders essentially of those. So like Triple Eight, Walkinshaw's, Pace Innovations and Jimmy White's fab shop, which is Erebus's fab partner, are all working on that stuff, and they're going to be punching out a lot of these chassis in the next few months.
Yeah, that's definitely a positive step. As we talked last week, you know, the concern from the teams is we can't do much at the moment and we're going to have a lot to do at the end of the year. And even when you break down that timeline, I mean, the plan was to be aero testing in September and we're at the end of, you know, July now. I mean, there's a lot to do, particularly when you factor in the fact that we actually need a new body shape for the Mustang to happen before we go testing in September. And again, that is, you know, something that we spoke about several months ago. You know, that the aero testing will always be subject to the actual launch of the S650 Mustang, which we still don't know much about in terms of when it's going to be. But the aero testing can't happen until the car has been globally launched, because, you know, you can't have guys just snapping iPhone pics of a brand new body shape as it races up and down a runway somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, Stefan, sad news from across the ditch in New Zealand with the impending closure of motor racing activities at the famous Pukekohe Park. I think this is a great shame. Pukekohe is clearly no Yas Marina in terms of facilities, but that's actually what I always loved about it. You know, it's an old school racetrack. It's the only one, as far as I know, where you can get a white bait fritter from a food van as you walk through the fan area on the way in. Supercars just look badass driving around there, particularly in the last sector. It's just it's a cool place. The fans, it's always a lot of people there. They're highly passionate. They absolutely love it. It's always just been a fun place to go motor racing. You and I have had some pretty memorable trips together over there to watch supercars at Pukekohe. Are you equally saddened by this news? And do you sort of agree that, you know, Hampton Downs will be the logical successor to where we go next?
Yeah, it's definitely sad. And I think it was a genuine shock to most of us. Like, I believe supercars did have some warning, but the news leaked out a little earlier than they'd expected. Like, they'd gone over there for the launch of the 2022 event with a couple of drivers, and then this all came out basically the next day that from April next year, Pukekohe will be no more as a racetrack. So as you kind of covered off, like, it's a phenomenal racetrack and just a mega place for supercars to run, but also just the atmosphere of the Kiwi fans there. And, you know, like you and I weren't there for the glory days with Murph winning. I can only imagine what that would have been like. But we've been treated to some epic battles between Shane and Scotty McLaughlin over there. And even that shootout, I think, in 2018 when, like, all five Kiwis were in the field, like, just the reaction from the fans on the front straight to that, it's like, it's just such a good place to go and watch supercars. And I can only hope that Hampton Downs can in some way replicate that. I don't even know how many fans they can fit in there. I think that might be something they need to do a fair bit of work on. But that does look like where it's going. So supercars won't be lost to New Zealand or vice versa, but definitely not having Pukekohe is a massive, massive loss. And it's a shame that they couldn't slot in another one in early 2023 before it does actually shut. Like, I believe they looked at it, but, you know, with Newcastle and AGP in that early part of the year and the logistical elements of getting supercars across the water, they just couldn't do it.
I think that the atmosphere is going to be pretty special at Pukekohe this year, that's for sure, particularly after the break of a couple of years and then with this news that this will be the last one there. It's going to be something pretty special, I think. But, yeah, look, it's I just think it's a shame. And obviously, you know, Hampton Downs is already serves, you know, the motor racing needs of the area to a very large extent because of the way that Pukekohe is a shared facility and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, clearly there's work that needs to be done to make sure it can house the amount of people that it needs to. For a supercars event, I guess that was all kind of looked at when Hampton Downs was going to host supercars in 2020. So it's all doable stuff, but it's just a case of, yeah, actually getting it done. And will it have the same soul that Pukekohe had? You know, the answer is probably in the short term, no. But, you know, Kiwis still love their motor racing and I'm pretty sure they're still going to turn out to watch it. All right, the Bend this weekend, Stefan. Mustangs have won 10 of the last 11 races there in the South Aussie countryside, which bodes well for the likes of Dick Johnson Racing, Cam Waters as well for this weekend. Remember, we saw Andre Heimgartner run away with a race last year in a Grove Racing Mustang, so David Reynolds might be licking his lips heading to the Bend this weekend, even if their form has dipped a little bit lately. What are you expecting to see out there?
Yeah, I think it has been a bit of a Mustang track, and we've also seen this year the qualifying speed of the Mustangs has been really, really strong. So you'd expect pace-wise for those two DJR cars and Cam Waters to be right there, and Grove's probably the wild card. They should be in the mix too, but you certainly never count out 888, and then you also factor in that they were able to test their last week, as we spoke about last week, using that rookie day for Brock Feeney to go to another racetrack and get some laps on a track that's been a little bit up and down for them over the last couple of years. So I feel like that's a significant free kick for them. It certainly, they were able to roll out that process at Winton, and that had been sort of a bogey track, and they were very good there this year. So yeah, as usual, it's probably going to be too close to call in the build-up, but it looks to be a bit of a tasty weekend.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the Winton thing because all the talk on the Thursday at Winton was how that test hadn't gone that well for them and they hadn't really learnt much, but clearly there were some gains to come out of it if we look at how well Shane did across that weekend at a track where they don't always run right at the front. Just to follow up on that little testing kerfuffle that we revealed last week about the rookie days and that sort of stuff, I've been told by Supercars that they are set to review the wording of the rookie testing rules at the end of the season just to clear up any grey areas in the rule. Whether that means they will be able to continue to test at multiple alternate tracks or limited to one, I'm not entirely clear on that, but my understanding is that Supercars was pretty comfortable with what 888 did. So there is certainly no issues in terms of what happened, and perhaps the rule will be cleared up to that effect that you can use multiple tracks within your allocation.
And I think the other point about the Bend is I saw some Supercars marketing with "Feel the Heat at the Bend" as the tagline. So make sure to bring your shorts and your thinnest t-shirt because it sounds like it's going to be pretty hot down there.
Well, as you are our resident South Aussie, I'll just take your advice blindly, Stefan. I won't even bother looking at the forecast. It's tank tops and short shorts for days.
Excellent.
Well, given this is the anniversary of Heimgartner's first Supercars win, plus he's been in a pretty good patch of form for Brad Jones Racing recently, I grabbed him on the phone to see how he's feeling heading back to the Bend this weekend. So, I mean, it's sort of the anniversary of your big win at the Bend, not so much in terms of the date because we're a bit later in the year as we were last year, but, yeah, it still must be a nice feeling going back there. Does it hold some nice memories heading back to the Bend?
Yeah, well, any track you can win at, and especially obviously your first win, it's pretty special. So, looking forward to it. It's a track I seem to gel with well. My driving style suits that track. And looking back to going there, it looks like it'll be wet maybe again this year, which obviously good because we won in the wet last year. Yep. So, it's good. You go with a bit more confidence knowing that you'll have a good weekend.
It's been a happy hunting ground for Mustangs. I think 10 of the last 11 races there have been won by Mustangs, including your win last year. You're in a Commodore now, obviously. Do you sort of feel that you can still take it to the Mustangs this weekend?
Yeah, I don't think it really matters too much. I think if you manage to extract the most out of it, you'll be there or thereabouts. And, I don't really see it as a major issue for us. BJR car's been very fast and race pace, and I think we've made some good gains in qualifying this year. So, I think it should be pretty strong. It's definitely nothing that we're sort of considering too much.
You talk about the BJR pace. I mean, it has been really, really good, and it's just been incredibly consistent, I guess, in terms of from whenever it was sort of Perth onwards when things started to kind of gel. We're used to seeing BJR cars go good every now and then, but we've been to some pretty different circuits, Hidden Valley, Townsville and places, and you've been right up the front. Have you guys really unlocked something with the setup in that car now? Have you found a genuine gain, do you think?
I think so, yeah. It's always hard to know and you never want to say it too early. But, yeah, I guess as you said, we've gone to so many different types of circuits the last three or four rounds and had, varying amount of success, but success nonetheless at all of them. So, there's some good gems to take along with that, and that's something I guess that you always struggle with as a team and a driver is having a consistent amount of, performing at a consistent level and then trying to understand why that is and trying to replicate that for other tracks and, try and make it a bit more stable and a bit more consistent, which is the battle. So for us, we're finding little tools, little things that have worked, different traits at different tracks that work with different, surfaces, different curbs, blah, blah, blah. So I think we're starting to get a bit of a picture in our mind and, it's all heading in the right direction and just my luck, it'll be just going good by the time we need to switch to a new generation of car.
You played a big part in the silly season last year with your move from, Kelly Groves as it was at the time to BJR. Now, obviously, there's a lot of investment going into Grove racing and all that sort of stuff, but you guys are really, really performing really well there at BJR. Do you feel that sort of vindicates, your decision to make that switch when, from what we understand, there was the option to stay where you were for this season?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it too much, but I'm happy with where I am, and joining BJR has been, a pleasant surprise, if anything. I knew I was going to a good team. They've had Nick in the top 10 in the championship the last few years and got some great results. So I knew I was joining a good team. And, we've gelled really well together. I enjoy going to Albury, believe it or not, and getting amongst the country vibes. I'm a country boy from New Zealand anyway. So it all sort of works out nice. And Brad and the team and everyone has been, so accommodating. So it's been all pretty smooth sailing so far.
Hey, speaking of New Zealand, some sad news. Well, I think it's sad news from over there, late last week with the impending closure of Pukekohe and the motor racing there. What's your take on that? I mean, it's just such a classic, iconic New Zealand circuit. You must feel it's sad news, right?
Yeah, it's one I didn't see coming, I think was the more shocking part. It's, it sounds a bit pathetic, but I was almost in a bit of tears in some ways because for so many young Kiwis and especially myself, that's where I got introduced to supercars. I remember sitting on the grandstand directly in front of where they had the podiums and stuff and watching, Greg Murphy, Rick Kelly, Marcus Ambrose blast around and thinking, oh, this is so good. And then obviously Greg was quite successful during that time. So it was a great time to be a Kiwi, great time to be a supporter. And that's just the core memories of my whole motorsport career go back to those days. So, to think that that circuit won't be anymore after next year. You know, it's quite upsetting. I guess that's sort of what inspired me to be where I am today. And, you know, sitting on the other side of that fence, I never thought, you know, realistically I could get there, and to sort of be here now, it's a bit unreal. And, you know, I really, really, really want to win, or at least be on the podium at that home track and sort of complete the loop, I guess, from being in the grandstand and then, you know, realizing my dream and being on the podium or winning there. So it's always, it's always a tricky one. We have so many good circuits in New Zealand, so I'm sure we'll find an adequate replacement. But the history of Pukekohe, I mean, it's like Sandown, you know, steeped in history.
I mean, Hampden Downs is the one everyone's talking about. It's probably been the logical successor to that Supercars round. Is that what you could see playing out, that we just sort of move down the highway a little bit and go racing there?
Yeah, I think it's logical. Tony Quinn's done an amazing job with that facility, and it makes sense. It's close to Auckland. It's a pretty cool track. It creates some good racing and got good facilities. So for sure, it makes a lot of sense. But I think, you know, I'd love to see them do another one in New Zealand. I think the New Zealand people get around it so much, and we love our motorsport. We're a massive motorsport nation, and it'd be wicked to see. But I think Hampden Downs is probably the most obvious one for now.
And we thank Andre for his time there. All right, let's take a look at what's happening around the world. Joseph Newgarden won the first of the IndyCar doubleheader races in Iowa ahead of Pato O'Ward and Will Power. O'Ward then won the second race from Power and Scott McLaughlin. While Newgarden spun out of the lead and crashed heavily, he was initially checked by IndyCar Medical and released before later fainting in the paddock. He was then sent to hospital where he spent the night. Newgarden was released on the Monday to return home, and Santino Ferrucci is on a standby to take his seat for this weekend's IMS Road Course race if needed. In NASCAR, there was plenty of drama at Pocono, with race winner Denny Hamlin and second place Kyle Busch excluded when their cars failed post-race technical checks. It was due to some tape on the front bumpers, I think, that was under the wrap. That promoted Chase Elliott to the race win. Early in the race, Denny Hamlin ran Ross Chastain into the wall in what looked like a bit of payback after a few run-ins between the pair so far this season. And Charles Leclerc crashed out of the lead of the French Grand Prix and gifted victory and another 25 championship points to Max Verstappen. Mercedes pair Lewis Hamilton and George Russell were second and third, the latter passing Sergio Perez after a VSC in what was a tense battle for the final step on the podium. Daniel Ricciardo finished ninth, two spots behind McLaren teammate Lando Norris. Stefan, it's a 63-point lead for Max Verstappen now, and I just keep thinking back to the Australian Grand Prix when Red Bull was having all these power unit issues and the Ferrari looked so fast, and Verstappen was basically saying he had no chance of winning the title. And here we are, we're not even at the summer break, and he's basically got the thing shot to pieces. Like, it's amazing, right?
Oh, it's really fallen apart for Ferrari, no question. Like, they've had reliability issues, but then some driver mistakes too, which sort of in the modern era, you don't really expect these guys to be just dropping it like Charles did on Sunday. And I couldn't help but feel for him, really. Like, that scream he let out over the radio when he was in the fence was heartbreaking to hear, but at the same time kind of good to hear the emotion, you know, like it shows how much it means to these guys. And I think Ferrari overall, like, they've always been an easy target for criticism, but you look like at Carlos Sainz's race too, and some of the back and forth over the radio about pit stops and the false information they gave him about a stop-go penalty. It's all just not quite as refined as Red Bull, and doesn't really feel like a team that's ready to win a championship.
It's just a shame that they aren't ready to do that, and we don't have a better title fight, because, you know, on pace, the cars seem to make their pace quite differently, but it all sort of washes out somewhere evenly. And we've actually kind of got all the ingredients for like a pretty epic title fight between Max and Charles, or even, you know, like Sergio and Carlos are right there as well. But we don't have it because of all the things you just mentioned, which is kind of a shame.
It is, but at the same time, obviously, they're right there on pace. So every weekend you can go into it pretty excited about watching a Grand Prix and knowing the battle will be pretty good. So, yeah, even if Max sort of ends up walking away with the title, it looks like there's plenty of exciting racing to come.
All right, let's dip into the Castrol mailbag. Frank Delia asks about the monetary value of winning a supercars race and if there are bonuses for fastest laps and all that sort of stuff. So in terms of prize money, under the modern structure, there is really only the $1,000 that comes from Armorall for a pole position. The series doesn't provide any prize money beyond that. Instead, there is effectively the appearance fee that's part of what's now known as the team's racing charter. So that's it at a series level. At a team level, results can definitely be used for financial incentives built into drivers' deals. Every single deal is different, but some drivers will have win bonuses, podium bonuses, pole bonuses, or even bonuses for top 10 finishes. The bonus structure will generally relate in some way to the starting salary, so a higher starting salary will often mean less bonuses and vice versa, but every driver's deal is different. Stefan, I've seen your work on the sim on a Friday night. Surely you'd be a wins bonus man through and through.
I'd be more about getting that money for the pit stop challenge, because that's the other area you can make some cash in supercars by the boys rattling the wheels on and off pretty fast, boys and girls, I should say. But, yeah, like the win bonus thing's interesting too, because some teams do that actually with all their staff. Like certainly Triple Eight, at least in the past, has been very big on that, to have everyone engaged in the pursuit of winning. And some sponsorship deals are also, there's a significant bonus to the team, especially if they win a championship or a Bathurst. So, yeah, there's lots of consequences for winning. But as you say, in terms of the actual prize money, there's none. And from memory, I think that goes back to like certainly before the Archer sale. So I reckon it was like sort of the end of 2009 that Roland Dane actually was behind what really was the end of any prize money. Like in that sort of era, all the revenues were kind of split, 90% equalized, but then there was still 10% of it was paid out as prize money. And he really led the charge to just make it equal for all, which essentially is what that rec model was built on, the equality of revenues on that scale.
Yeah, which kind of it helps limit the rich getting richer, I suppose, which is the whole point of it. All right, it's Castrol Star of the Week time. Stefan, this week I'm going to give my Castrol Star to NASCAR legend Jimmy Johnson, who finished an IndyCar career best fifth in the second of those Iowa races. It's been a pretty long road for Jimmy since switching from NASCAR to open wheelers, but, you know, it's pretty cool to see him go out there and get a result. Who does your Castrol Star go to this week?
I'll stick with the USA theme, and I'm going for Ty Gibbs, the 19-year-old grandson of legendary NASCAR team owner Joe Gibbs. Ty ordinarily runs in the Xfinity Series, but he made his Cup Series debut as a last-minute stand-in for Kurt Busch at 23/11 Racing there on the weekend. He hadn't even sat in a Cup car until Sunday, and he finished that Pocono race in the top 20, so I thought that was a pretty cool story.
A worthy star recipient. Now, just before we go, Castrol Racing has a cool competition going at the moment. They want to see your Castrol-inspired helmet designs. To enter, you need to head to the Castrol Racing Facebook page, save the template, and then get creative. You can design it in Photoshop or print it off and pull out the crayons, then send your design directly to the Castrol Racing Facebook page. The best design will win a Castrol merch pack with a jacket, shirt, and hat. Entries for that close on August 3rd. Well, that's it for this week. Remember to like, subscribe, and review our work wherever you listen to your podcast. And we'll be back next week with more Castrol Motorsport news.
Hey, it's Chaz Mostert here. If you're a club, state, or national level racer on the circuit, on dirt, or in speedway, or rallying, you can now tap into know-how of Walkinshaw Racing Services. And you don't need a supercar to get in the door. From bonnet to bumper, we can help you with your motorsport services and expertise that won't cost you an arm and a leg. Engines, design, paint, machining, fabrication, we do it all for everyone in the motorsport family tree. There's CNC machines, 3D printers, a chassis build shop, and paint and engine shop that you can utilize. No job is too big or too small. If you're a clubby or national racer, a professional motor racing business, or anyone in between, make sure you tell Walkinshaw Racing Services what you need. Call now on 1300 W Racing or email services@walkinshawracing.com.au.